Coming at you live from the old Bean Town, it's Video Games Hot Dog. Dot oh yeah. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
I'm not doing this in the right order.
Shit. Awesome.
Yeah, it's good. We're off to a great start here with episode 76 of Video Games Hot Dog. Coming at you live from the basement complex in Chicago, Illinois.
Woohoo!
Chi-Town, the windy city, home of the Boston Baked Bean.
And the Bears.
Dog.
The Boston Bears.
Yeah. And simultaneously the home office in Mesa, Arizona. Home of...
the Big Apple Sox.
Mm.
Yeah. To just to change things up on everybody, we have decided to put Riff on the remote side this time. and now Zach and Kevin, who didn't introduce himself, that's me, are recording in the same room. Yeah, wow, I'm already getting drunk.
We should get one of those mirrors that you step through. Put one in here and one in the office in Mesa.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those mirrors that you step through.
Yeah, right. those things.
I saw that there's one in your bathroom. I stepped through it, and it leads to a world where there's a bunch of broken glass on the ground and like a wall with a sort of a coat hook on it.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm still in that magical world because I couldn't find the mirror to walk back through. This world sucks.
It's possible that every world's entrance has just the ground is littered with broken glass. I think that might be just a feature of the entrance of every world.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of broken glass in my wardrobe.
I mean, that's because that's mostly what you wear, is
yeah.
Glass shirts. It's like a hair shirt, but even more metal. I guess
no, that would even be like more glass.
Like a barbed wire shirt. Yeah, so I've been on the road.
Yeah, how's your trip been?
Have I missed anything in back in the old homestead, Riff?
Not really. This... sprinklers started being weird, so I turned them off.
Oh, good. Everything will die.
Yep.
The sprinklers started being weird.
Yeah, I think one of the sprinkler heads got knocked off by the lawnmower or something. It was just gushing water whenever the sprinklers came on.
It was I knew that. It was fine. It's just digging a hole. Pretty good. I saw it and I was like, I should do something about this, and then I left town for a month. So that'll probably be all right. Our office doesn't need water, really.
Huh. You have a lot of plants that you like to...
you just need to pee outdoors.
Living.
Well, they'll be okay for a couple weeks.
Okay.
I don't know, man. Do I look like a botanist?
I mean, it's just the desert, right? Things don't need water there.
Yeah, but it's the rainy season now. No, it's not. There's no rainy season. What else is going on back there, Riff?
Have
I gotten
nothing
any exciting
much.
Packages?
Oh, yeah. You got three great big boxes from Lego.
Yeah, I
nice.
Did. Yeah.
Are they all advent calendars?
No, only one of them is an advent calendar, I think.
Oh. What else did you get?
R2-D2 and a haunted house and...
oh, sweet. Like a life-size R2-D2?
I don't think it's life-sized.
Really?
It actually has a Lego Kenny Baker inside it.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah. We should get a Lego... a life-size Lego... Peter... who's
Molyneux?
Chewbacca?
Oh, yeah, Peter Molyneux.
Yeah, Peter Dinklage. That would be pretty small. A life-size Peter Dinklage would be pretty small. Who's the guy that played Chewbacca?
I don't know.
Russell...
man, I'm drawing a blank.
Russell Crowe?
Pierce. Crowe... Cheryl Crowe.
A life-size Cheryl Crowe.
Yeah, a life-size Cheryl Crowe. And just actual Cheryl Crowe. That's one of the things you can order from Lego now.
Huh.
Just, hey, have Cheryl Crowe come to my house.
I didn't know she was made of Lego.
If it makes you happy, can't be that bad.
I mean, it only costs 10 cents a brick, so it's pretty cheap.
Sure. So good. I've got some Legos to look forward to when I get back.
Yep.
I went to Graceland. If you want to hear me expound at length about Graceland, listen to the most recent episode of the Overthinking It podcast, on which I was a guest. And
awesome.
It was pretty sweet. And I went to an arcade in Austin called Pinballs with the Z.
Yeah.
And you know that replacing an S with a Z, serious mark of quality.
Yeah.
Silly bands.
I mean, they have to pay for every letter substitution that they make, so...
Yeah, and Z is really expensive. I think it's like 10.
Yeah.
Per.
Yeah.
It's rough. Yeah, so what they did was they had a place called Pinball, and then they... somebody played Za on a triple letter score at the end of it. And then they put a bunch of pinball machines in a building. And they were all... So I got spoiled retroactively by the arcade that we went to yesterday here locally, where you just pay $15 and you can play all the games that you want. Pinballs, you actually had to buy tokens. And then every game, like to play Pac-Man, it was 50 cents.
What? Did they require like a minimum token purchase?
Well, a dollar, I think, was the smallest thing that the machine would accept.
Well, like you could walk in and wander around for free.
Yeah. In fact, there were a lot of people just wandering in, peeing into the pinball machines and leaving. Most of them were toilet pinball machines. Did you guys ever play toilet?
I mean, it's really... pinball machine. Yeah, I don't know. It's. I mean, the ball just goes straight down the hole. It's... And there aren't any flippers on the sides. I mean...
Well, there's one. There's the one flipper.
Right. Okay.
But it's hard. All it does is sort of accelerate the... Although, you know, not really. I think if you dropped a pinball into a toilet, it would fall down just as fast as if you dropped it into a toilet and then were flushing it.
If you spin it just right, it will sort of go around a bunch of times before...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like there's things in the mall. Down.
Yeah. The penny... Don't need a penny things.
Penny tornado? The penny funnel?
Yes, the penny funnel.
I wonder if you could design a pinball with wings on it so that if you threw it counterclockwise into a clockwise flushing toilet, it would generate lift and become a perpetual motion machine.
And I mean,
it's a perpetual motion machine as long as you
Harry
have an
Potter?
Infinitely flushing toilet.
Does that require a lot of plumbing?
Well, no. I think about the same amount of plumbing that you've got. Now, it'd be easier with an industrial toilet, like a toilet in a commercial building, that you could just prop the flusher open and just it would flush for a really long time.
Is a commercial building like a one between two actual buildings?
Yeah, it's small. Yeah. It's pretty annoying.
Yeah.
Modern cars have a button that lets you teleport past them.
They're becoming more and more common.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So, Kevin, what have you been up to? It's been a while since we did one of these, I guess. Is 5 days longer than usual? 3 days?
Yeah.
What day is it?
I went to a beer tasting that
How's
I
that?
Enjoyed quite a bit. It was almost all local Chicago beers. It was a fundraiser for
Or
this.
As they call them here, Duh Beers.
Duh Beers. Yeah, it was
They're a diamond. It's like
Blonde
a weird
diamonds.
Diamond cartel, yeah.
It was a fundraiser for this theater group that I enjoy attending in Chicago called Too Much... No, that's the... The theater group is called The Neo Futurists. The show that I enjoy attending is Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind.
Oh, so The Neo Futurists perform Too Much Light,
yes.
Too Many Babies.
It's one of the longest running shows like ever. It's been in this next year will be the 25th anniversary of
And this is the one where they do the weird thing with the dice, right?
Yep.
Explain that.
The whole concept of Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind is that it is an attempt to do 30 plays in 60 minutes. It's all original pieces that they have written, usually of course pretty short. A lot of them are pretty abstract, a lot of them are pretty funny, but some of them aren't. Some of them are just, you know, sort of political statements or, you know, personal emotional pieces or whatever. On Friday night and Sunday night of the shows, they roll one giant six-sided die. And that is the number, they add those two numbers together, and that is the number of new plays that they have to write for the next week. So on
Wait,
average...
they roll two. They roll it twice?
No, they roll one die twice and add those two numbers together. Once on Friday, once on Sunday.
I see.
And so that on average, there's 7 new plays every week. So on average, you can go once a month and see a totally new show.
And do they replace them in the order of how old they are?
That is not entirely clear to me. I went... Like, I think last Sunday or the Sunday before last, and there was one play on there that was there from when I had seen it last, which is like
72.
5 weeks ago.
So. 5 weeks ago. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they could have just gotten unlucky on the rolls.
Yeah, exactly.
Or lucky on the rolls. I mean, really, lucky for them, unlucky for us.
Yes.
That's weird, man. How would your job work if you just went in and rolled a die and that's how much you had to work that day?
Yeah. When you come into the show, the ticket price is $9 plus the roll of a six-sided die.
Per person. Not like per
day.
So it's like super office stress.
If you tweet about the show or the fact that you're at the show, if you do your social networking and show it to them, they will let you roll a special five-sided die instead.
What does a five-sided die look like?
I've never done it. It's just, it looks like it wouldn't be, they could have just constructed it to come up with five every time because it's just completely irregular.
So by a five-sided die, they mean a six-sided die with five on every face.
No.
Okay.
It's like, it is a very strange shape.
You can make an arbitrarily sided die by just making it like a football that you sort of shave.
Yeah.
Surfaces that are only curved in one direction.
Sure.
On, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Balls.
Yeah. Yeah. You make a ball.
Yep. You shave some balls.
Yeah.
To make dice. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I saw them, I think, since the last show. They're just great. I have been going to shows of theirs for over 15 years.
Is it the same dudes for 15 years?
There was one dude who's been doing it since 1990 who was in the show. Like, it's like a revolving troupe. Like, they don't... There's maybe, I don't know, 10 or 12
people. Do they roll a die to see how far they rotate?
Yes. Yeah, it's like the entire show is randomized. Every word, they, like, instead of actually writing, they just... get a Mad Libs word generator.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Let's go again.
Yep. We're going to go on Sunday.
All right.
And then we've made plans to go see Second City, which should be exciting.
Sweet. We're going, before the next episode of Video Games Hot Dog, we're going to go back to the Galloping Ghost Arcade where we went yesterday and play. Yesterday was for fun. Next time is for work.
For keeps.
Yep. We're gonna take notebooks and we're going to write down all of the high scores on every game.
Yeah.
And then the episode is just going to be us reading the high scores aloud.
Where had you heard about that? Because it is probably the best arcade I've ever been to.
Yep.
It is phenomenal.
Oh, you're asking me?
You sent me
a link. Yeah, that's right. That's the one I sent you the link to. I think it must have been a Metafilter thread.
Ah, okay.
I found it by searching for best arcade in America. best arcades in America. It was the first thing that came up, and I said, oh, I wonder if that's anywhere near where we're going. And sure enough, it was a half an hour away from where we were staying for most of this trip. It was really good, though. No pinball machines, which, actually, that's pretty good, because that means more room for arcade games. And it wasn't, like, completely focused on older games. There were, like, a tremendous number of, like, 90s games.
Yeah.
There were also some weird things. There was some, like... custom game that somebody had apparently made just for there that was like it was like a shooter using StarCraft sprites.
Huh. Yeah, it was super weird.
Maybe this is something I didn't think to actually look this up, and this is probably more for next show, but it was a cabinet labeled Mission Craft. So it's either that or like an expedition to explore a slice of cheese.
But yeah, it was a bunch of StarCraft sprites all over the place.
I think you were a Mutalisk, and you were shooting some sort of stars.
I didn't look that close.
Yeah. The player character appeared to be a Mutalisk, but you were also fighting a bunch of Zerg, so I don't even know. Maybe it was just all Zerg, all the time, craft.
Mm-hmm.
Craft services. Craft Zerguses.
Kerrigan.
You guys been doing anything else?
Video games? I went to a corn maze. That's like a video game.
Whoa, what's a corn maze? I'm just kidding, Riff. I know what a corn maze is.
Okay, how was a corn maze? I was going to say.
Do they just get the band together and you sort of try to run between them or something? Like, how does that even work?
Oh, that was a very silly thing to say, Kevin.
Also, isn't corn maze just the same word twice?
Yes, my people call it labyrinth.
How was
so
that, Riff?
You saw the movie Labyrinth.
It was okay. It wasn't the most intricate corn maze I've seen, but it was pretty reasonable. They had a weird scheme where they handed you a map, which was basically a blank sheet of paper with six squares on it in like a 2x3 grid. And throughout the maze, they had planted these six mailboxes, which contained rolls of tape and individual squares of map. So instead of just completely wandering throughout the entire maze, you were basically wandering until you found the nearest mailbox, and that showed you the sixth of the map that was the closest in vicinity to that mailbox. And so,
oh, that's clever. Did it tell you which quadrant it was?
Yeah, they were numbered. So it was...
And did they have like a north-south? I guess they had some sort of orientation.
Yeah, the orientation was just which way up the number was. So it would have been... Jenny and I felt like it would have been too easy, which, I mean, for us that are into wandering around in corn mazes, it would have been too easy. I feel like it probably would have been...
Wait, would you say that you're into wandering around in corn mazes? Because this is the first I've ever heard you mention one, and I've known you for, like, almost a quarter of your life.
I like corn mazes. We used to go to them all the time in Pittsburgh. But,
okay.
Yeah, so it would have been too easy for us, but we figure, you know, the amount of time we're willing to walk around in a corn maze is probably a lot longer than how long a mom is willing to push a stroller around in a corn maze. But we managed to even it out by accidentally not finding the first two mailboxes. So we spent a lot of time wandering around in the first third of the maze, and then... By the time we found the third mailbox and everything became much, much easier, we had not yet become tired of it, but tiredness was on the horizon, so it worked out to being just exactly as much corn maze as we wanted. So it was pretty good.
Was the maze divided into, I mean, how many exits were there from each of the quadrants?
You keep saying quadrant, but it's actually a sextant.
Sextant.
Sure. Except so did you navigate using a sextant?
There were a couple of different exits from each one, but not very many, and they did not like stretch onward very far before you discovered that you were at a dead end.
I kind of want to make a corn maze where the strategies of always take a turn right and always turn left are defeated by having meaningful progress through the maze required going up or down.
Yeah, there's so like
a tunnel underneath.
The one we used to go to in Pennsylvania all the time had bridges that served that purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, see, like that I think would be great, because then you could screw people who thought they were being clever by using an algorithm.
Yeah.
Because that's your goal, is to screw people who think they're being clever.
Yeah.
That sucks. Why do you want to... Why?
Why do I want to screw people who think they're being clever?
Yeah. Why ruin the experience for people who think, like, oh, I want to get through this maze as fast as possible and say, ha, 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 and win all the treasure?
Well, but that, I mean, by always turning, by always turning right, you are almost guaranteed not to get through it as fast as possible.
Okay.
Right. So your algorithm needs to be smarter than that. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, so, I mean, my algorithm is get in a helicopter.
Light the maze on fire.
You need to put a roof on. Remember that last time you made a hedge maze? Before you could place leaf blocks individually in Minecraft.
Oh, God.
Took a really long time.
Yeah.
And then I came and set it on fire, and you were really sad. Wait, I guess you didn't find out about that.
Did you actually save the state of the server and then burn everything down?
No.
Because I had that huge tree that would have probably been pretty spectacular, too.
Yeah. That at least you placed the wood blocks one at a time, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I grew a bunch of the trees. I thought I was going to try to grow it totally organically, but that turned out to be stupid. So.
It gets weird. It doesn't work that well. Plus, you have to have all those dirt blocks in your tree.
Yeah. Well, you dig them back out after the tree's grown.
Yeah, all right.
But still, yeah, it's dumb.
Riff, have you been playing any video games besides Corn Maze Explorer?
I played some of Tokyo Jungle.
Oh yeah, is that on the PlayStation?
Yep, PlayStation Network. It's pretty
what
good.
What were your experiences?
It's weird. It was pretty much like
advertised. Did you have any
emergent
stories emerge?
Not really.
What is this again? 3DO Jungle?
Tokyo Jungle. Okay. For those of you that haven't heard of it, it is basically a sort of a basically like an old school beat 'em up type game, except you are an animal, which could be like a domesticated chihuahua or a lion. I think eventually you can unlock dinosaurs, so I'm eager to find out how that's explained. But and the environment that you're running around in is a post-apocalyptic section of Tokyo after all the humans have mysteriously vanished and plant life has overgrown everything. And so, yeah, basically you run around killing other animals and eating their flesh to stave off your inevitable death. And once you've claimed enough territory, you can mate and breed a new generation of similar animals, which sort of become your lives.
So, I mean, we understand how life works, Riff. Tell us about this video game.
So you don't gain the ability to become a lion by eating enough lions or something.
No, it's okay. I'm not entirely sure what the unlock mechanism is, but it seems like fulfilling certain goals with certain animals unlocks further on animals.
Huh.
And
what
also
sort of goals do you have?
Things like kill 30 animals before 5 more years pass, or a boss animal will appear in a certain sector of the city, and
like
and
a boss hog.
Yeah, possibly. I believe there are boars in this game.
There you go.
And there's little SD cards sprinkled around the map, and every 3 of those you collect, you get a little bit more of the backstory and unlock some story missions. Which
does the backstory
at the moment
include
are,
the disappearance of the humans, or is it more about like how the animals came to be in their spots or whatever?
Yes, well, sort of both. The ones that I found so far have been like journal entries by veterinarians and zookeepers who are starting to wonder why their animals are behaving oddly. I haven't yet progressed to the point where the shit has actually hit the fan, storyline-wise.
Do you get the sense that the animals killed all the humans?
I'm not sure. Possibly. There are
or
some...
that the animals got smart enough to build robots, and the robots became self-aware and went rogue and killed all the humans and then themselves.
The animals are certainly violent. One of my good playthroughs, I tried out a cat and got it to, like, I think 4th or 5th generation, and was running up to a section of town because we'd pretty much used up all of the food in the previous section, and had, like, this small mob of 5 or 6 kittens running through an alley, and just out of nowhere, a tiger appeared and destroyed all of them with one attack.
Whoa.
So there's a little bit of emergent gameplay story for you.
Cat
on
cat.
How do they justify
violence?
A tiger having an AOE attack?
I think it was
on fire?
Well, it's more of a cleave attack than really an AOE. So it's sort of an AOE, but not a large AOE. What?
I asked if he crouched. So, okay. So,
oh,
I mean, a cleave is an AOE attack, right?
Right, yeah. But also, not a 360 degree AOE attack.
Burning Bright would also potentially be an AOE attack. So. Yeah, so Tokyo Jungle.
Good.
Yeah.
Good job.
It's pretty good. It's very weird.
Were you playing it co-op?
No, just single player.
Anything else?
I feel like there was something else, but I can't off the top of my head remember what it was. So
did
it must not have been very good.
Did you end up downloading Carmageddon when it was free for that day?
I did, but I haven't tried it yet.
It's pretty fun. I've been playing it some.
Are the controls
good? The controls
good?
Are garbage. Yeah, no. The controls are garbage, but the game is pretty fun anyway. You still get to drive around and run over a bunch of pedestrians and blow up other cars. I've just been playing it on easy because I don't want the game to be hard.
Is there a clown in that game?
There are a bunch of people that you would consider dressed up as clowns.
I think you're thinking like of Twisted Metal.
I think I am thinking of Twisted Metal. But Carmageddon also has a bunch of people dressed up as clowns?
Well, no, but they're like all so heavily like made up and ridiculous looking that I could see. Like they look kind of like juggalos more than anything else.
Okay.
Yeah, it's weird.
Tokyo Jungle-o.
But you know, like I really enjoy just like running my car into other cars. It does not stop being fun.
One of my favorite
things. I played
a
bunch of Carmageddon 2, I think, back in like 98.
That was the big game for me. I never played much of the first one, but Carmageddon 2.
Yeah, I mean, the first one is sort of like a proof of concept. I feel like Carmageddon is to Carmageddon 2, like Star Control is to Star Control 2, right?
Okay.
Like, it's a bunch of the beginnings of them sort of figuring out what they're thinking about doing, and then Carmageddon 2 was really where the game was at.
So it's the same game except with no Andrasynth.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I went to a demolition derby, sort of. It wasn't really a demolition derby. It was a figure eight race.
What is that?
Well, you get a bunch of beat up cars and then you race in a figure eight, which you know,
inevitably
the intersection of two different directions on the track result in some collisions.
Huh.
Saw some tires flying off of stuff.
So it's like it's like unexpected demolition derby.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, like everybody knows it's going to happen, but it's not. You're not like trying to make it happen.
There were some cars there that the announcer it desperately trying to keep people interested during the long periods in between races where people were fixing their cars. There were some cars that had been there since like 1990. Running the race every day, every single day that they do the figure eight race. I think this is like hell for a lot of people. Just like, sorry, you have to just keep racing. You never get anywhere. And there are these antagonists crashing cars into you all the time.
I feel like to me, it's sort of like my old game with M&Ms where like I would determine which M&M to eat by taking two M&Ms and squeezing them together and eating the one that cracked first. And then the problem being that then that second M&M that you've used is now the one that won is weaker now.
Yep.
So you have to sort of divide the field in half and pair them off. And then now each one has been used in a single fight. So they're both equally weakened.
That was the thing about the old British schoolboy game of Conkers had a similar,
how does that game work?
Yeah.
I never understood it.
It's basically just, a horse chestnut with a hole drilled through it, hung on a string with a knot on the end so it doesn't fall off. And the one kid just holds his by the string so that the nut is dangling down at the end of it. And the other kid, like, swings his nut by the string at the first nut so that they thwack into each other. And whoever's breaks first loses.
Huh.
Do they take turns being the swinger and the dangler?
Yeah.
And does that matter? Does that, okay, like, can you, is there a technique to like improve?
I guess
your
there
odds
must be. Yeah. I mean, persons? It's like that game. Did you ever play Pencil Break in grade school?
No.
Doesn't sound like a game. This just sounds like a name for some vandalism. Yeah.
Well, it's basically the same concept.
Paintball?
One kid holds his pencil by both ends horizontally, and the other kid holds his pencil by one end and sort of hauls back on the other end and to flick his pencil at the middle of the first pencil, and you trade off like that and whoever's pencil breaks first. But yeah, it's that same sort of
like
thing
doing
where
my homework and drawing what? Mazes.
Huh.
And we did play chalkboard poop where you both tried to, what you would do is you would take turns getting further and further away from the chalkboard until somebody failed to get any poop on it.
what was the methodology of delivery of the poop?
Pooping.
Huh.
Yeah. We did occasionally, I recall, have sort of like, not exactly play chicken. If you're peeing next to somebody at a urinal, just both of you slowly start backing away from the urinal, and the person who can get the furthest away
while
with the stream still connecting to the urinal, I guess, wins. Something I don't know. I could look
some
those
these
dudes
games
up and
were
see where
winning
they, where
is
they wound
a dubious
up.
Glory.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good. Eventually, you'd be like against the wall, and anybody who wanted to get to the stalls would have to sort of run the gauntlet. It was sort of like at Disney World, those fountains that just spray the little discrete arcs of water above. And if you're dressed as Abraham Lincoln, it knocks your hat off.
That was, I remember seeing that at the Bellagio, I think, not at Disney World.
Yeah.
That was pretty freaking sweet, actually.
It is. It's an old tech. I don't know.
Awesome. I don't know why I hadn't seen that before.
Yeah, we should get some of those at the house. And then invite a bunch of people over, have an Abraham dressing up as Abraham Lincoln party.
Actually, we should invest some time working on cool water visualization technology, because that's pretty.
Why
sweet.
Is that?
It's just cool. Like, there's I guess another thing that I did was go to the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago since the last show. Is that, I don't remember talking about that on the show before.
Nope.
I can't remember anything really. But they have like a. This kind of interesting misting technology where you can like walk through something that looks like mist, but it doesn't get you wet at all. It's just made out of water, but I don't know what they do to aerosolize it, but it no longer has the wetness associated with.
You're sure it isn't mist. Just smoke?
They said it was water.
And they tell you it's water and you believe it because you're so high.
I was definitely believing what they were saying. I mean, I'm reading the signage and not questioning, but yeah.
I mean, you could have a fish tank and shine lasers at it to light up individual molecules of water to make a holographic display, right?
Ooh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Huh.
But that has to be in a fish tank. Yeah. And you have to get a fish tank where all the water molecules are standing still.
So you can watch the little plastic diver guy show all the time.
Yeah, that's the only thing that's the proof of concept is always that. And so you've seen these all over the place. You just had no idea how amazing the technology was. Because you're like, what?
Yeah, wow.
I always loved those things. Little diver, and maybe the chest would open up and a bubble would come out, and then you'd see some fake treasure.
Yep.
And you're always like, man, I wish I was that guy. No brain, bunch of cheap, shitty treasure. Imagine what I would do.
What more do you want out of life?
A lot of things if you had some cheap, shitty treasure.
Yeah.
I played some Flash games on Kongregate.
Okay.
I played this game called Bit Dungeon. Have you seen this one?
I don't know. Sounds familiar.
I don't know that it is. I don't think it's procedurally generated. I think there are defined dungeon layouts and monsters and that kind of thing. Maybe sort of randomly arrayed into rooms. And then you just sort of wander through, kill stuff. They drop potions and loot sometimes. You kind of just upgrading your gear. You get some magic to cast spells. It's not like amazing, but it was kind of fun, you know. Like, it was all controlled by the mouse, which was a little awkward. I think you like clicked where you wanted to go, and then if you held down your mouse button, you would stop moving, which held up your shield and then would also unleash your magic attack if you had magic after a certain amount of time. So it was like a single button game with also sort of a pointer. Yeah, it was odd. But you know, it looked cool. Like, I liked the sort of 8-bit art style that they chose, or maybe 16-bit. But and then I played a game called Into Space 2, which is one of those sort of genre of games where you're launching a rocket and you try to keep getting higher, and there's like power-ups scattered around the sky.
Like that paper airplane game, or like Penguin.
Yeah, there's like Penguin's one. There's like the Dolphin
Club Penguin.
The Dolphin one where you're swimming out of the ocean and stuff.
No, that's the Dolphin Olympics.
Yeah, that's kind of the same thing.
That's different. It's not.
But you want to get up into space.
Okay, but I mean, not every game that the goal is to get into space is mechanically identical to every other one.
But you
right?
Don't you upgrade your dolphin?
I don't think you do.
You don't wax it?
I don't think in... No, you don't.
Okay.
Nor do you flog it. I think that in Dolphin Olympics, you're just a dolphin.
Huh. Okay.
You're thinking of the Hedgehog Launch.
Maybe I'm thinking of Hedgehog Launch. One. Yeah, okay.
Where you sort of bounce off of some weird floating platforms.
Yeah, yep. It's a strange genre of game. I don't really understand how... It's like something that, because there are like readily available physics engines out there, people are like, what can I do with a physics engine?
What, a burrito bison? Is burrito bison one of those?
It sounds familiar. I don't know that I've played that one.
It sounds like a restaurant.
There's the first one I ever remember seeing was some weird Japanese one where you crash a bicycle and then your hurtling corpse is what is the projectile.
Yep, like a ragdoll.
There's that one where you're in a shopping cart and you're trying to do sweet-ass tricks in the shopping cart.
Right.
Yeah,
that's if you land upside down, you're going to get kicked.
You can eventually get, like, one of the power-ups is a girl that rides in the shopping cart with you.
Yep.
I think maybe she's invulnerable, or maybe you can kill her and then you have to buy her again.
Yeah, like, do you get rockets? I forget how that works.
I think.
You get, like, better wheels and stuff.
You can
stuff.
Do, like, a handstand.
I definitely played that.
You can do a handstand on top of the cart.
Right. Well, you get more points for doing tricks.
It's pretty extreme.
Yeah. That one, so Into Space 2 was, as that genre goes, was reasonably fun, and I think they'd done their math well. Because the progression was pretty solid in terms of feeling like you're making progress, getting some power-ups, being able to do some more stuff. They had a variety of different sort of skills. They added like some missions to sort of vary up the gameplay a little bit. So just generally kind of neat sort of deeper gameplay as in one of those, whatever that genre would be called.
I tried to play a little bit of Kerbal Space Program.
Oh, yeah?
Speaking of which,
I saw
the
video for that. I didn't know if it was any...
I downloaded the demo and I went through the tutorial, and then I was like, all right, I'm going to try to build a cool rocket. So I I was like, I don't know how to attach these fuel tanks to anything. So I just sort of drew an engine, and then I put some fuel tanks on the outside of it, and then I put some tubes that said fuel tube running from the tank to the engine. And I built two stages of that. And I went to launch the rocket and it just sat there. And I'm like, huh, I must have done something wrong with the bottom one. So I hit the button to advance to the next stage, which drops the bottom half of the rocket off. So I took off, and I got, I don't know, 50 feet in the air and suddenly get hit by the first stage of the rocket, which finally figured out what was going on and learned to take off, and then just, like, spun in circles and hit the ground and exploded. And suddenly all three of my little dudes, Jedediah was one of them, suddenly became KIA.
Aww. Oh. Was that the link that you...
No, that was when I was playing XCOM. I also played some XCOM where I named all of my guys after you guys. Jenny, I was changing everybody's nickname because it automatically assigns them a nickname after a while. Uh-huh. Riff, you were Nero, so I just changed your nickname to Riff. Jenny was Double Down, so I thought, yeah, that's pretty good. So I left her as Double Down. But then she got killed because Josh apparently learned how to shoot at retard school, and so his inability to kill the chrysalid guys got the whole squad killed.
Oh,
and
no.
I felt real sad. Except Kevin had died several missions earlier,
and when I
sent him the screenshot, he was like, I can't believe you're making me drive a Kia in this game. The car is terrible. Kevin was like the shittiest sniper.
Ugh.
I had two kills.
Only two kills. He's the sniper, and he only has two kills.
Yeah, well, that's pretty
terrible. A sniper only has one job, and that job is to kill dudes.
Did you have that team sight or whatever that skill is that everybody
loves? I did, and he never once got a chance to use it. You failed. You never got a chance to use it. I kind of want to go back and play some XCOM after hearing 600 hours of podcasters talking about XCOM on the drive out here, because I feel like I have a little better... idea of how to approach it. I also, speaking of things that have been done to death in podcasts, I also finished Dishonored.
Oh, yeah?
I got less and less into it as time, like, I started feeling this pressure to finish it before I left on this trip, and so I stopped really exhaustively exploring levels, and in the last couple, like, I didn't figure out the non-lethal way to kill the, like, primary assassination targets. Which those are much better stories. The things that they build in the sort of like
non-lethal ways.
Yeah, the narrative branches that they put in that are the ways to get rid of these people without actually killing them are just way more interesting.
You got me really intrigued because you said that the first one that you encounter is like really really neat.
Yeah, no, I mean it's so much worse than just kill. Like they're all just like, oh man,
wow,
I would not want to be that guy. You, one of those guys, you actually run into him later if you go,
if you don't kill him,
you, like, find, you end up in the place where he's been exiled to, and he is super, super pissed.
Wow. I wonder, does the story change if you have killed them?
My impression is not very much.
Huh.
Yeah, and I started another playthrough where I was just killing everybody, but then I was like, I'm not gonna finish this play. I didn't manage to do a no kills. I was playing it on easy, so it was only... There were some where I didn't know that the, like, zombie people counted as people. And so I killed some of them, and then it was like, oh, you killed 12 hostiles. I'm like, oh, I didn't want to kill any hostiles, so I didn't get the achievement.
You don't like killing neutrals. That's a thing about you. If their name tag is yellow, you're like, ugh.
Yeah, I don't want to kill yellow stuff. I mean, that's just like a helpless antelope or whatever.
Yeah, but what if you're hungry?
Well, if I have a quest, which is to get 50 helpless antelope livers or whatever, then I'll do it.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
I mean, I'll do anything that an exclamation point tells me to do. I'm going to hang an exclamation point over the mirror, and then I will be fucking unstoppable.
That's true.
Just like go into that world, get all the broken glass, and then just do whatever the fuck I want with it. And then I played, I bought a game on the iOS device called Word Welder, maybe just Welder, but it's like w.e.l.d.e.r. like mule.
Okay.
Which is instead m.u.l.e. Or like the band REM, which is actually r.e.m. Or r.e.m. Depending on, you know, alphabetization schemes. Or it's every single one of them, and whenever you want to listen to an REM album, you have to figure out which one of those three things that particular album is in there as.
Wow.
No consistent ID3 tagging. That's what I'm talking about. Anyway, I have yet to finish. This is a thing that I wanted to talk about that happens to me sometimes, especially with phone games, that really very much turns me off to a game, and I really hope that I can work through it on this, is that I am probably 3 hours into my first game of this casual iOS word game because I just keep beating levels and continuing through them. And I really wish that this were some sort of endless mode and that there was some sort of puzzle mode where you could play short games of it. Anyway, the way that it works is there are... You're basically... The playfield is a grid of letters, and your basic move is to swap to adjacent letters.
Okay.
And you're trying to make words of four letters or greater, which will then disappear and stuff falls
out. Do you have to make a word?
No.
As a result of the flip?
You have a fixed number of swaps. Scoring points, which you do sort of Scrabble style, earns you more swaps.
Oh, so you could...
So like every 250... Yeah, you can just keep... If you're doing well, you can just keep playing indefinitely.
I see.
You also start to get some special moves that are unlocked, like the ability to... If you find a word that is backwards, you can use a special move to reverse a sequence of tiles.
Huh. Okay.
You gain the ability to swap any two tiles, regardless of where they are on the grid. Also, as a natural, there's different kinds of tiles. There are some blank ones where you can use a swap to just stamp a letter on it, and then it becomes that letter, which is how you set up, like, playing more than one word at a time.
This is to dive a second into, like, game design. Like, you know, in that Word Realms game that we have been making, this kind of makes me want to think of like crafting mini games as like as word grid games versus just being given tiles for like the rest of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really sat down and written up ideas for the way that. But I, you know, years ago, I had some prototypes made.
Yeah.
For a lot of this stuff.
But I mean, I can imagine just sort of having those two sort of divisions in terms of how things are done.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of things you can do with words.
Letter tiles.
And letters.
Yeah.
But so there are those wooden tiles that you can just put any letter on. There are tiles that are like rusty that are fixed in place. And so they don't fall. You can't swap them and they don't fall. So they will just leave gaps underneath them as the other letters fall out.
Oh, interesting.
There are tiles that are hot. So you can't touch them to swap.
But they will fall.
They will fall, yeah. You can activate... There's like a wrench that you can activate a certain number of times per level or a certain number of times per game that will let you move a hot one or a rusty one, I guess. You also earn gigawatts over time, which I think you keep between games in a just like...
But you wouldn't know because you haven't played a second game.
Let's ruin this bullshit with some... It's like fucking... Triple Town, like the gold in Triple Town.
Oh,
it's like,
shit.
Hey, let's just ruin this with some social media horse shit, even though it's not a social media game.
But that's the future, Zach. Everyone wants to cash in on the endless cash cow that is.
And unless you always start out with 500 gigawatts and you just earn more gigawatts over time. But it's like a currency for different kinds of special moves.
That are just game breaking.
Yeah, well, like you replacing the whole board with a new tile set or whatever.
Well, right.
You can do that like once per level. Or multiple times per level at the cost of gigawatts.
Right.
And the game just never fucking ends. And that's, like, I don't want an iOS word game where a game of it lasts 3 hours. It's fun. I keep going back to it. And I keep thinking, like, I've unlocked a couple of new game modes. I'm like, boy, I wish that I could try those. But
so,
I still can't finish. What's stopping me from just quitting?
No, the very earliest version, or the very early... Or lowest, like, difficulties of... Crap, what game was it? Was it... Dungeon Raid, maybe? Does that have an easy, medium, hard setting?
Yes.
So I think the easy version of that, like, I could just play for hours, and I was like, this is terrible. And it wasn't until I was like, oh, I just put it on normal or hard, that it was like, oh, okay, this is the game.
Yeah, that is a good point. And like, I feel like in a game like that, because it, while I am probably better than average at games where you're making words out of tiles, just because of the way that my brain works, I'm not so good at it that this game isn't really easy. Just objectively.
But, like, you know, a kid playing this probably on the same difficulty setting might only play for 5 minutes before they lost or whatever.
Like, I also wonder if I didn't select sissy baby mode.
Yeah.
Not realizing what it was going to do to me.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they made the easy mode for babies.
I like for a game to have an end state. When it's just a thing that I want to pick up on my phone, right? I like it being possible. I mean, you know, which is not to say that I haven't spent a bunch of hours playing, like, Kairosoft games, you know, or Tiny Tower.
Oh, right.
I stopped playing Tiny Tower. But
game dev story?
Sure. I mean, game dev story had an end state. It was just really long. Although I think I did... That is the one game that I actually played twice. The one Kairosoft game that I played multiple times. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. That kind of game, like a big sim like that, I think it's okay for your first ever game of it to last a bunch of hours. But this is just, it's a blemish on an experience that I'm otherwise enjoying.
It's weird that, like, the game that you are enjoying, you're bemoaning the fact that you get to keep playing it and enjoying it.
Well, because the later levels get really hard and stressful, right? Because you have a limited number of moves, and you're like, ugh, fuck, man. There are so, like, the board, there's nothing left but, like, X's and Q's, and everything is on fire or rusty.
Okay, but you're still managing to beat it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I wish I wasn't. Like, I wish that...
I mean, it sounds like it is rapidly heading towards a point where you won't be able to beat it, and maybe that's good, right?
Which, well, I would have thought that, except it's been heading there for days.
Huh. So, yeah, maybe difficulty curve is something that they need to fix, or you need to find the harder modes.
Oh, speaking of which, I finally beat FTL for the first time.
Nice.
On easy mode with just a random ship that I wasn't even planning on playing a real game, and it was a terrible game. I was so in the toilet the entire time, kept getting shit killed and having to waste money repairing instead of buying new stuff and upgrading systems. And
do they make the in-boss easier if you're having a hard time?
I don't think so. I think I just got a lucky distribution of stuff at the end.
Oh.
And it got to be like a coin toss at the end. Like they had just so thoroughly destroyed my ship that the only thing that wasn't on fire and still functional was the weapons, which just happened to be doing just enough damage to the boss that he died before I did.
Huh.
But it's cool. You unlock a new ship with a new kind of system.
Have you been playing FTL, Riff?
Not a lot of it. Once in a while.
Hasn't gotten a hold of you?
Nah, not really. I enjoy it when I play it, but, you know, I play one ship's worth and then put it down and, you know, eventually it occurs to me to go back to it, but there's a long amount of time in that eventually.
All right. Well, is that everything that we've been playing?
I think so.
Kevin, what's in the news?
We had talked about the Hero U Kickstarter, and that has launched. That's the Lori Cole thing with the people that made Heroes Quest or Quest for Glory, I guess.
I'm not excited about that at all after having seen that web page that they made.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
I haven't actually read any of the promo materials. I just marked it as something that I want to return to and check it out. And then also that something that we talked about, I think, on the last show was Star Citizen, which I had said, oh, isn't it interesting that they're not doing a Kickstarter for this, has launched a Kickstarter. So... yeah, I don't know what to think about that.
Is it for the same amount that they were trying to raise on their own?
They are just trying to... they have broken up their target goal amongst various crowdfunding things, right? So they've got their own one where their goal was like 600K, and then they've got Kickstarter where their goal is 600K, and they've got...
are they also doing an Indiegogo for 600K?
I don't know. They might be.
Also, we hope to sell $600,000 worth of shirts from our Zazzle store.
Cafe Press.
Yeah.
So those have started. I am excited by the ideas of them. I have not really decided what I'm going to do on the Star Citizen one. I was tempted to, I didn't realize that their fundraiser was sort of a short-term thing. I thought it was like a back us, because they were doing their homebrew one, I thought they were just going to let it run indefinitely. And I was like, oh, well, 6 months from now, maybe I think I
read somewhere that they were trying to get that money to prove to a publisher that it was worth putting a real game dev's worth amount of money.
That seems like a strange model.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wonder, because they'll have already sold the game to their most hardcore fans, right? So is a publisher going to be like, sure, I guess we'll give you some more money for this audience that you may not even have, since you've already theoretically gotten your audience to back you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how that works.
It's weird that, I mean, if you took somebody from 20 years ago and said, oh yeah, so this company raised $1 million to make a computer game with, and that's, one hundredth of what it would cost to make a contemporary computer game.
And they're like, you're crazy.
Yeah, they would. There isn't that much money in the whole world. Because you're asking a baby from 20 years ago.
Right. And then, still in Kickstarter news...
you're asking somebody who doesn't speak English from 20 years ago, and they say that a million is not a real number.
That game, Haunts, which gotten funding maybe a year and a half ago, has sort of been shelved. So it's the first game that I know of that was successful, got more than they were asking for, and
not crazy more.
No, I know, not like they're not a huge high profile case. It's not like Double Fine says, oh, by the way, we're not going to deliver this game.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, we ran out of Tim Schafer's.
Yeah. But yeah, so I'm curious what the follow-up from this is going
to
be.
Haunt said they just went through all their money. Like they used that money to contract a programmer for a year. They did, and then the year went out and the game wasn't done.
Yeah, they had two programmers and both of them quit. And so the guy who started the thing is like, I will pay people who want their money back out of my own pocket. It's something he's promised. And he's like, this guy, I still intend on getting this game made. It just might take another 5 years or something. So if you're willing to stick with it, you'll get it eventually. And it's interesting to see, like, a lot of people feel like money that they give to Kickstarter is just philanthropy. They're not looking to get their money back, but a lot of people view it as a purchase, right? And like,
yeah, I mean, I would say that former group is correct and the latter group is wrong.
Yeah.
Well, but except for the fact that in the terms of service or whatever of Kickstarter, when you make your project, if you don't deliver what you promise, then they say your backers have every right to come after you for the money.
So. I feel like it was a bad move.
But I think that would be true. That would be true even if they didn't
spell that out, though, because that creates this point of view that we're saying is inaccurate, that the expectation that this is a pre-order and not a donation, which is just false.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like for me, I feel less so about a thing that has already funded, which is why I'm sort of less likely to support something at a significant level that's already funded, unless it's something that I just like, oh, this is a way for me. I mean, like with Idle Thumbs, like this is a way for me to give these guys some money as a direct way of saying like, hey, here is a vote of support for this project. Right. Also, I didn't happen to be there for the half hour in which it wasn't completely funded. So I'm saying, But I mean, to me, when I fund a Kickstarter, for something like Project Gorgon or whatever, which it doesn't look like it's going to make it. I hope that it does, but I don't think it will. You're taking a risk. I mean, it's
except that your money, like it isn't a risk per se. It's like if this doesn't actually get 100% of its funding, then
you're taking a risk that if it does fund, that it will actually amount to something. right? You're taking a risk that they're not, that you run the risk of them wasting your money and not producing something that is any good or at all. And I think that that's an acceptable risk. I mean, it's not like I don't have like a budget for computer games, and sometimes what I spend that budget for computer games on is a Kickstarter, and then I'm going to be pissed if that $50 doesn't turn into a computer game. Right. You know, this is a way for people with discretionary income to throw some of that discretionary income behind an idea that they think is a good idea, but not it is not fair for them to actually expect something in return.
But that's the problem, right? I think it has to be structured legally as something where you're actually paying for something, because if it is just a donation, it begins to get into some weird territories.
Well, if it is investment, it gets into weird territory, right? Like, if it's an investment, then suddenly the SEC is involved. But it's not. I mean, it is explicitly not. Like, I think because it is a donation, like, I think they are...
But it isn't. It is not a donation.
But it is a gift.
It isn't. That's the thing. It is neither an investment nor a gift. It is basically a purchase of what you promise. Right? Like, that's the thing. Like, people who...
I don't know. That sounds dubious.
I think for the most part, I'm not sure that in general Kickstarter was meant to be a thing where at a certain level you got the thing that was being produced. Right? Like,
you get something. You are supposed to get something. Right? Like, you are supposed to have... Like the guidelines where you, like, at every tier you should give them something that is meaningful, right? Something that makes it worth them backing it.
So like, if you give me a dollar, the next time I'm in your city, while I am standing in a high window of a hotel waving my dick at that city saying I will think about them.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
I've been waving my dick at a lot of cities.
Yeah,
it's been pretty good.
Good.
Hello, Austin. hello, Memphis.
but Kickstarter explicitly says on the end, when you are making the project, if you do not deliver, that, you know, the people who backed you have the right to come after you for their money back.
With bats,
yes. A flock of bats.
Yeah. Go, my pretties. Retrieve my investment.
It's not an investment.
Eek! It's not an investment. Eek!
It's not a donation, not an investment.
That was a bad.
So, yeah. Kickstarter. So, yeah, this game haunts. It's on the shelf, and it may never come out. I don't know. I'm curious what's going to happen when that happens to a million-dollar Kickstarter project and how that'll be perceived. Because it's just, I feel like it just erodes confidence in
people. We'll see what happens to us when Word Realms doesn't come out.
That's not funny. Not funny at all.
Fuck, we should work on that.
Yeah. That's basically all I've been doing.
No, I know.
For weeks. Other news that is not game related exactly is that they seem to have found a planet in the Alpha Centauri system, which made me think of the video game.
It's the size of Alpha Earth, Centauri. But it's made out of fire.
Yeah.
Didn't they find exciting. A planet the size of Earth that was made out of a giant diamond?
I don't know.
I feel like it wasn't the size of Earth, but it was still pretty big.
Turns out there was just a. It turns out that astronomer was just proposing to his wife and had placed a diamond on the end of the telescope.
That's pretty good.
Story got out of hand. Yeah.
So what do we know about this? What do we know about this planet, other than it theoretically exists?
Yeah, that's the problem, right? Like it's all wobble. I saw the charts. I saw the data, and like, while I guess I believe it. It looked a lot less convincing to me than
say the opening pan of Star Wars.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, did you see their thing? It looked a lot like noise, and they drew a line over it that was an oscillation. I was like, huh. But yeah, error bars. Yeah, there's like a planet that's pulling, like orbiting really, it's like very close to the star. So its orbit, it's like years, like 3 Earth days or something.
Wow.
It's very, very fast. Yeah, that's why it was so hard to detect, is it's very small but very close. So there's no way that it could support life as we know it, at least.
No, you'd get car sick, planet sick.
Yeah.
I don't think you would actually detect the motion.
I bet you would. I bet your cheeks would all be going like in a wind tunnel.
Be really hard to wave your dick at stuff because it'd be all flappy.
That'd be rough.
Yeah. I did try to wave my dick at a wind tunnel once.
I think it depends on which side of the planet you're on, right? Because if you're on the front side of the planet where it's encountering all of the solar winds, then, yeah, you'd be all blown around. But on the backside...
But if you're on the backside playing the old Epic game, Solar Winds.
Yeah.
Was that Epic?
I don't know.
Game never really caught on. It should have been really good, but it wasn't.
Should have been good because it had a good idea, or...
It had really good sprites. It should have been good because of that. Because
they had a good
artist. Yeah, you were running around. You like had a ship that you were upgrading and shooting dudes, shooting planets.
Back in the early days of upgrades.
Yeah. Yeah. Seemed like pretty good upgrades. But I never really... I've gone back to it and think, nah, this isn't a very good game. It's hard to do a space shooter. So they can't all be Time Pilot.
Yeah.
Or Time Pilot 84, which is... has nothing to do with time.
Well, you're in the future. That's a kind of time.
Space Pilot, they should have called it. Because you're the same spaceship every time.
I played a game, I don't remember what it was called, where you were trying to rescue five of your comrades who had been scattered throughout time. And it had a...
Was it Time Soldiers?
Maybe. You had a joystick where you were moving around, but the you also rotated the top of the joystick.
Yeah, 8-way rotation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Heavy Barrel or Ikari Warriors.
That was pretty fun, actually. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Did you go to Patriot Times?
I
Pioneer
didn't.
Times?
I started, you know, that time when there were Patriots. And then I went to World War II.
So. Yeah, there were Patriots then.
Well, sure.
And then in the Gulf War, there were Patriot missiles.
Right.
And Scuds.
Where you just load a Patriot Scuds into the missile and shoot him at a guy?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a human cannonball.
Yep. Yeah.
We played an Avengers game where they were using people as missiles and kept, they were like a person with their arms down by their side and they would just spin real fast and they shoot them at you. It's pretty weird.
You sure that wasn't just a guy with a particular mutant power?
With
the Avengers aren't mutants.
Pretty sure it was, yeah, these guys were not mutants.
Hawkeye's just a good shot.
Yep.
Iron Man has a magic heart.
Robot. Yeah.
And a robot magic suit. Heart.
What does that white guy have?
I have no idea.
It's privilege.
He can fly and he's got a laser beam. So I don't know.
He wasn't the Silver Surfer.
I don't think so.
No, I think that's a Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Licensed property. Who's the guy? Who's the albino from the Avengers?
Yeah.
I don't have any idea who you're talking about.
Me either.
He's white and has a cape and I think maybe a third eye.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm sure I can look it up.
Okay.
Is it like a green cloak with a hood?
Nope.
Completely white.
Completely white guy.
Huh. Then I have no idea. Did you hear about GOG.cock has started doing Mac games?
I did, and I clicked on a link about it, and it took me to a thing that I didn't know what it was. Huh. Explain this to us, Riff.
Basically, like it says on the tin, if you go to GOG.com now in their... browse categories selection, there's one now for Mac games. And so they've got Mac versions of a bunch of different stuff. Syndicate and, all the D&D games and, the sort of stuff that GOG sells. But it's pretty
But stuff that wasn't originally on Mac. I mean, are there Mac ports of just the DOSBox encapsulations?
I think that may be some of it. Some of it is stuff that was originally on Mac. But I think the processor has changed so much over the years that they can't possibly using the original versions. So, I don't know how it works.
It used to be PowerPC, and now it's Intel.
But, yeah. I mean, you guys were able to run, you can run DOSBox on a Mac, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's no reason that most of the stuff on GOG couldn't have been packaged for Mac.
And it was. I mean, I was able to buy most of the stuff.
Yeah, you had to jump through some hoops sometimes to get it to work. But yeah, for the most part, the DOSBox stuff worked. I wonder, though, if they're going to try and move towards getting like old Windows games packed in such a way that they'll work properly on Mac, which would be
pretty
cool.
Or maybe they're going to release the GOG.box.
Ooh.
A console for playing Star Control 2.
Hmm. That
console
Avenger
has a keyboard and mouse as its controller.
Was named Vision, and he was an android.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's why he was all
never heard of him.
Yeah, me either.
What were his abilities?
He could fly.
He could fly.
He had density control ranging from invulnerability to intangibility.
Okay.
Why wouldn't you just always choose invulnerability?
Well, because, if you're invulnerable, you can't fit through a door.
Mass control ranging from extraordinarily heavy to weightless.
Of himself, not of other
things. I assume, sure. He can phase into beings slash objects, then solidifying as a mean of molecular disruption, causing pain slash damage or death slash destruction.
He sounds pretty Imba.
Yeah. Solar energy projection via eyes or solar jewel on forehead. Computer slash IT network interfacing.
Okay. USB powered.
Superhuman strength, intelligence, reflexes, and senses as an artificial being, and capable of self-repair and regeneration as an artificial being.
Who built this guy?
Some god thing.
So it's a robot built by a god.
The robot Ultron.
Ultron. Okay.
And Ultron is like some crazy powerful robot.
Is he as powerful as Vision?
Probably more powerful, right?
How could he be?
What could he do
that doesn't fit into one of those things that you just said Vision could do?
Artificial intelligence. I don't know. Extreme duration. Fuck, hell, I don't know.
Oh, I mean, unless Vision can do all of those things, but the only way to communicate with him is via logo.
Yeah. Turtle up.
Be a pretty serious limitation. So we decided to take these three iOS games that we did as an assignment and make them into three assignments because we have to do some kind of rapid-fire show recordings here. So this week we're only going to talk about Dungeon Story, an indie game about old-school swords. That's what the OS in iOS stands for.
Old-school
swords.
Yeah.
I did not like this game. This was the one that I picked and was excited about. It turns out that your stupid Rovio game was a good game, and I wanted to play it instead of Dungeons Sword. This game, I like the mechanics of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you had just described it to me, I would have said, this is an improvement over Dungeon Raid in every way and is good and I like it and it seems like a thing that I want to play a lot of. But then actually playing it, it's just kind of hollow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It had no polish of any sort in it. It felt to me like playing the results of a Game Maker tutorial.
Or just like a jam with prototype.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It felt like a prototype.
the difference between a zombie and a skeleton is whether it says the word zombie or skeleton in a featureless red rectangle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's monsters with special abilities, but those are completely randomized because any monster can have any special ability.
Yeah, and you don't know what they are until they activate the special ability.
Well, you can click on their name to see what it is. Yeah.
Well, gosh.
And just all the numbers were extremely static. Like, you always know exactly how much damage the monster is going to do to you on a given turn.
No, that varies. It's got random around a certain range once you get higher level.
Okay, I must not have had the patience to get to that high level then.
I played it quite a bit to try to give it a chance, and it never does get awesome. But the one advantage that it has, I feel like, is that you can play a really short game, and it doesn't feel... You don't feel bad about it, right? Because if I want to play for 2 minutes, I can play an entire game in 2 minutes and just let myself die, and I don't feel like I've wasted any time.
I felt like, I don't know, there didn't feel like there was anything exciting in it. Like, if in a match 3 game, like Bejeweled, like where you're swapping two icons and making matches and the jewels fall down the board, there's a lot of excitement just in... A lot of excitement and strategy in making the chains and seeing the things explode and more things fall down and they explode and more things fall down and they explode. And that's awesome. But in a game with this mechanic, you don't have that, but you do have the satisfaction of pulling off a really, really long thread of matches. But this didn't do anything to recognize that you'd done anything cool.
Well, yeah, that was the thing that I felt really frustrated about as well, was the notion that, like, the making the first match of 3 would do, like, 200 damage, and then if you matched 20 more on there, you maybe added another 50 or, you know, yeah, 60 damage. Or
where,
like,
whereas it should have been like going up exponentially and doing fanfares and explosions and shit as you got longer chains. But it, well, yeah, but,
I mean,
just
Whopper
didn't
really do that. Dungeon Raid didn't really do that, and both of those were satisfying.
Whopper had other stuff going on, which was more interesting.
Yeah, like the way that you invoke abilities in both Dungeon Raid and Whopper were way, way more interesting than in this, because it was like you just had a battery, and then when you used any of your abilities, it just did that ability with all of the juice that you had.
You didn't get it, you didn't get saved to up. Choose any sort of strength to it or anything. And it also taking a turn to use your special power sucks.
Yeah, balls. Especially the one that's just like take slightly less damage over to fuck, man. This is like a thing that you think, "Oh, I'm almost dead. I should defend." And then the act of defending results in you losing.
Yep.
And that's pretty bullshit. Yeah, especially since it uses it. You can only ever do one in a row because it consumes all of the resource to use it.
It would not have been imbalanced to let you take the rest of your turn.
The fact that you're going and trying to find these objects and all the objects do is unlock another level, which is just the exact same game with different numbers.
Enemies. They're like different. Not that it matters, but they do have different named enemies.
Is there ever a meaningful distinction between the fire magic tiles and the ice magic tiles?
Certain classes can do, like if you're playing as a wizard, you get a bonus for using three of each.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, if you match two of each in your chain, it does extra damage. But other than that, there's no obvious benefit. I haven't unlocked the last three classes, so I don't know what they do.
You know, I wish all of the gear is just bigger numbers on the exact same thing, a linear progression through a list, you know, and it's like they have names, but they might as well not have names.
Yep.
You know,
it's all just slight numerical bonuses to what you're doing.
Nothing. You don't ever get anything that changes the board. Mm-mm. You don't ever get anything that changes the fundamental behavior of the board.
Some of the enemies' special abilities start to get a little interesting and require a little more strategy. Like, they can blind you, which means that, like, your attacks won't do any damage if you use them. They can confuse you, which just causes your stuff to do random things. Like, you might attack instead of heal, or heal instead of attack. Like, you'll collect swords, but you'll heal instead or something, right?
Huh.
Which is, like, that's kind of interesting. Like, that starts to be more interesting, but... every now and then a monster will have a special ability and it will just start using it every turn. And sometimes that ability is make the entire field gold. So for a while you get to collect a bunch of gold and then you get killed because you can't do enough damage to the enemy. I don't know. I don't know what they were going for exactly. It feels very unfinished to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know if it's going to get an update or not, but.
Well, guys, I'm sorry that I recommended this game.
Oh, I don't regret it. I like having a game that I can play for 2 minutes at a time.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to look at it and think about what was going wrong here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the other thing that I really didn't like was the interface. God, the act of like actually dragging your finger around was so much less polished than Puzzle Story or.
Line of connections like bounced off and got lost way more readily than any other game I've played with this mechanic.
Yeah, there's something that the other games are doing that makes it feel really good, and this is just much less satisfying. And I was regularly losing whole sections of my chain because it would reset and I wouldn't notice.
Yeah.
So yeah. So Dungeon Story. I'm gonna give this a not buy rating.
Yeah, are we giving ratings to things now?
No.
I rate it 2 butts down.
I rate it Alex Newton, our wonderful Kickstarter backer. Except times what?
Except the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah,
As it's bad like, as Alex good. Newton is good.
Exactly, yes. That's what I was going for.
This is a good segue.
Yeah. Dude, thanks. That was awesome. you know who would also object to this game?
Who?
Riff's dad. Unless Riff objects, in which case, not Riff's dad. Thanks, Riff's dad.
Well, Well, thanks, Riff's dad.
The boy from Mars's dad. Here is a picture of Riff's butt when he was a baby. Riff's dad.
And then it turns out I had a tattoo that says Mr. Lieutenant Time Bonkers.
Yeah, man, it's like a future tattoo. And I think what that means is that you yourself went back in time and tattooed the best name ever.
Oh, yes. That's freaking awesome. Because
that's what
you would do with a time
found
machine.
Found out that my dad was going to publish this picture of my ass as a baby on the internet and went back in time to the time when he took that photograph. Tattooed Mr. Lieutenant Time Bonkers on my baby ass.
When I was having a pissing contest with a guy at the urinal next to me, he looked over and said, "Why does your dick have the sexer tattooed on it?" And I said, "I don't know. When I get an erection, it says, the sexy mancubus Justin Miller." All right, you guys want to do some listeners' mail?
Sure.
Sounds like a plan.
Takenoko writes, "Zach, in one of your podcasts, you said that The Walking Dead is one of the best games released in your lifetime. I also agree that it's really good, but I'd be interested in hearing your explanation for why you said that. Also, did you play Episode 3 yet, and did that change your opinion in any way? Thanks."
No spoilers.
No, sure. I've not played Episode 3.
Yeah. I haven't played any of them yet. I'm basically waiting for them all to come out on iPad before I play them.
Yeah. So that is a strong statement, and I think
the writing is like really good from what I
hear. The writing is super super strong, and it has a facility with emotional engagement, I think, that I have not ever seen a video game do, and I think that I don't know that I would stand by the statement that it is one of the best games released in my lifetime, but I think it is pretty important. It's going to be kind of a high watermark for a while in terms of some stuff that I feel like in the next 3 or 4 years, you're going to see a lot of games trying to do some of the stuff that game does. I don't know if it will succeed. I don't know if anything will succeed.
I think for it to be the best game of my lifetime, it would have to beat out McPixel, and that's kind of a high bar.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, I'm not sure. I have not played out every branch in the story, but I can say with relative confidence that you cannot kick as many dudes in the balls in The Walking Dead as...
And that's the most important axis of all, right?
Also, They're not done with them yet, so they could still totally fuck all this up.
Oh, that's
no,
true.
No pressure, fellas.
That's true, yeah.
But I have not played Episode 3. And,
They've got Episode 4 out now, don't they?
Yeah, 4 is out. And I think at this point, since I'm 2 behind, I might as well just wait for the rest of them to come out. Also, I don't think I can play them on my laptop. I could probably play them on my laptop, but I don't know if they have cloud saves or not.
Yeah, having to play through them again would be weird.
You know what you can play on your laptop? Full Throttle.
Mm. Oh, yeah?
Yep. Scum VM.
I thought you were going to say McPixel.
Also that.
Fred Levi says, "Do you guys role play when you play video games? When you create a blank slate, or when you can create a blank slate character, do you think about that slate?"
Every now and then, sometimes. I'll pick a character and have like, they'll make them really dumb, and I'll play as if I'm really dumb or something. But not usually. I mean,
when we made our dwarves in World of Warcraft, we decided that they were going to be buddies.
Yeah, that continued to be true.
Were they? I mean, that was a role. We were playing the role of buddies.
Yeah.
While we were playing it, and we would always, I would always make you some sweet ass leather.
Well, we happened to make two characters whose names differed by a single letter,
single vowel.
Yeah.
By accident. I decided that guy hated gnomes, and so anytime I saw a gnome in town, I would / spit on them. That was it. And I mean, the aforementioned unwillingness to kill neutral enemies.
Right.
I guess that's role-playing. I always got mad when people killed critters, and it got to be it got to be this like race. Once they let you cook that thing that would befriend a critter, I would just be running ahead, befriending all of the critters, so that the other people in the party wouldn't be able to kill them.
Do they turn them green? Or?
They just become like your they become your guardian or whatever, and you can just have them all following you around.
Wow!
It only lasts like a minute.
Oh, that's cool,
man.
Oh,
yeah, that's pretty good. Have you gotten that Questeroid toy in the new patch that? Cause you to shoot lasers out of your eyes and make a critter explode?
No, but I wouldn't.
Wow.
It's pretty good.
I haven't been playing it. I guess maybe if I was out where the critters were scorpions that I don't mind
killing.
I don't use it on
like bunnies. I use it on spiders and stuff.
I don't know, man. I don't... Sometimes I decide, oh, I'm going to role play. I'm going to be a bad guy on this playthrough, but then I just can't do it. I think I play every character as a guy who would want to be good at a video game of what's going on in the world if what's going on in the world was actually a video game. Spoiler alert, it is.
I guess when I say I role play, all the characters that I role play tend to be roughly the same character-wise. That sort of, I don't know, that Han Solo-ish kind of character. So I don't know if it's really role-playing so much as just what my video game persona is.
What do you do that makes your character Han Solo-ish?
Just that sort of mercenary, neither good nor bad kind of attitude.
You shoot first and then you don't ask questions at all.
Yeah.
So I guess I was playing Skyrim like... a guy that would not want to cause the death of any innocents at all. And I worked really hard. I would like reload saves where anybody died from like dragon attacks or
so
whatever.
So you consider reloading a save working really hard?
Yeah. I mean, that's even built into the fiction, so I'm going to stand by that.
Wait, saving and loading is built into the fiction of Skyrim?
Yeah.
How?
That's that whole dragonborn thing. You have control over the time stream. That's built into the fiction. If you got to read those books, man.
No, they're garbage.
This is what they're talking about.
Huh, is one of the books just the novelization of Slouching Towards Bedlam? Man, that's a game y'all should play. Although I don't know that I can really recommend it to somebody who's not like who didn't grow up being into text adventures.
Right? Yeah, I wouldn't pick it as your first text adventure. I mean, that would be something like Andrew Plotkin's The Dreamhold or something like that. But once you've really? Gotten into them, yeah, then...
I don't think I ever played The Dreamhold. I would always recommend Wishbringer as somebody's first text adventure.
You don't think Zork is too obtuse?
No, Zork is too...
Zork is really difficult.
And Zork is also really, like, just super vanilla and bland, I think. I don't think that Zork has all that much personality relative to later stuff. I mean, they eventually developed that world into a world that had a lot of personality, but it took them 12 games and the hit web game Legends of Zork.
Right.
That's what really put the bloom on the rose.
Speaking of Zork, I found out the other day that I don't remember if it was on this podcast or the KOL podcast, but I believe I talked on air about that... that series of books that I hunted down, the old mystery novels that were done in dossier style with all the documents and feelings and stuff.
Yeah, you showed me one of those, and my conclusion was that you had paid like $30 on eBay for a little bag of somebody's pubes.
Well, it turned out that those particular books were literally the origin of feelies. Because that was the first time that anything like that had been done. And these particular four books by this author, when they were making the Infocom game, I think it was Deadline, one of their mystery ones, they were having the problem of not being, because they had a very, very small amount of memory in those days, so they couldn't include enough text to give you like fully detailed evidence. Like they didn't have the room to say like what this long letter from one character to another said. So in trying to figure out what to do about this, the author ran into this this series of books by this guy, Dennis Wheatley, and was like, oh, here's our solution. We'll actually print these letters on paper and put an evidence dossier in the box. And that's really the cool. First game with feelies like that.
I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah.
So really everything cool starts with pubes.
Yep.
Yep.
I think that's a fair
and
statement.
And burnt out matches.
Yeah.
Someone else writes, how can Riff be unaware of the Tales series by Namco? Tales of the Abyss, that he said he played on the 3DS, is one of the best of the series, along with Tales of Symphonia on GameCube and Tales of Vespeira on Xbox 360. I certainly enjoy the combat mechanisms of these games much more than any other RPG I've played. Riff sounded like he was making fun of it more than he was enjoying it. Man, I bought and tried to play Tales of Symphonia. Isn't that the one that takes place inside the, like, it's like the incident at Owl Creek Bridge, except inside Frederick Chopin's dying consciousness?
Oh, I don't remember it very well.
I'm pretty sure that's the plot of that, and man, I remember playing it, and I was like running around some sweet school, and then it was like, all right, time to go on an adventure, and then it was like, now we're in Crazy Tron Dungeon, and nothing makes any sense or has any referent. And so I was like, oh, okay, gonna play something else now.
Yeah, if I'm not misremembering which game I'm thinking of, I think that was the one that I just found the writing and dialogue so clumsy. And, you know, maybe it wasn't, because it was undoubtedly a translated game, so maybe just the translators didn't feel like they had a lot of leeway to restructure the sentences from being very literal translations into being something that would actually be good. But just the exposition and execution of dialogue was just very clumsy, I thought.
From the Wikipedia page, Tales of the Abyss's characteristic genre name is to know the meaning of one's birth RPG.
Huh.
Yeah.
So a TKTM OOB,
yeah.
RPG.
OBR. No.
TKMOB. Yeah.
Tkmob. Tkmob.
Okay.
Yeah. Moob, meaning of one's birth.
Do you think that one person made that up and put that in the Wikipedia article?
I don't know. It's apparently.
Tales of Symphonia is a homosexual.
Translation of the Japanese.
Right. Like Edgar Allan Poe. One of the discontinued dungeons in Tales of Symphonia was the Creamy Cock Grotto. All right, guys. If somebody wanted to send us a listener's mail, how would they do that, Kevin?
They could tweet us at VGHotDog. They could email us, VGHotDog@gmail.com. They could send us a forum message on videogameshotdog.com. Well, it's not actually on there, but there's links to our forums from there. And they could write a question in an iTunes comment that they made after they gave us some ratings on iTunes.
Don't write a question there unless
That'd
the question
be really
is
funny. Actually.
Why the fuck is this podcast so fucking good? .com.
I think
actually,
it'd be funny if people
they probably won't show any. Or maybe if you are in Finland, you can leave a comment calling me a racist.
Yeah, yeah.
Finnish. Oh, they all do that. Stupid Finns. Yeah, leave us a review on iTunes.
Yep.
Call your buddy that works at Apple and say, why does Video Games Hot Dog not even show up in the top 500 video games podcasts? Why is Video Games Hot Dog rated lower than a podcast that only has one review, only had one episode, and it was in 2004?
Huh. Is that actually a thing?
Close enough. That's close enough to being a thing that there's got to be something. There's got to be something keeping us off that list, man.
It could be the explicit tags.
There's a lot of stuff with explicit tags, man.
You think it's the politics?
Yeah, like fucking fuck-ass games, the podcast. It's like number 69. Yeah.
They work hard to maintain that position. Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for recording an episode of Video Games Hot Dog with me, fellas. We'll see you very soon.
Yeah, have a great couple of days, everybody.
Later.